You happy to be here today? Yeah! That's great. I love it when you're excited to be here. It makes it easy on me, man. Sorry, I'm running a little bit behind. I was over at the other campus, and we had just a lot of things going on. One of the things that happened, as you know, we're in the process of getting ready to merge the last little bit of the two congregations from one. I think I got stage lights that aren't on that need to be on. Next Sunday will be the last service at Langston for a few weeks. So next week, that will be their last service. And we're going to, I hate to say close it, we're going to temporarily close that service in order for us to do the remodeling and fix the roof damage and some other things that are on there before March 17th, when this congregation will permanently move to that location. Now, for those of you that have come to this one for the 3 years or so that we've been at this campus, if you've only been here in the last 3 years or 4 years since we've been here, prior to that, we were somewhere else. Prior to that, we were somewhere else. We're moving. But this will be our first permanent location. We will be located at the Langston campus. We'll change it. I got the signs being drawn up, everything. So it's going to be an exciting time. We'll have, for the first time, our own home. Now, for those of you, again, that have come here for a while, it's not that far. I think it's all of 4.6 miles. It's not that far. It's just right beside Ogeechee Technical College. So it's an easy drive. It's not that inconvenient. I hope not the inconvenience, and we hope that you'll continue to be with us and move over there. But there was a lady there that was talking about how she was from Missouri. She's a college professor of Spanish in Columbus, in Missouri, and that was her home church when she grew up. She was telling us all these stories about how they used to play softball out where that insurance agency is in front of it. She knew all this stuff, and it's just really just nice to hear all that stuff, you know, because I told him in that conversation there, homecoming isn't just a date on a calendar or like for us, for that congregation, the third Sunday in March. That's not the homecoming. Homecoming is when people just come home. So we just love to have it when you're here and be a part of this. Now, you're here today, and we're in the midst of a message series where we're talking about for this, pretend like this is your homecoming. Tell your neighbor, this is my homecoming today. Okay? And if you don't have a neighbor close to you, that means you need to bring somebody next week so we fill these up there. So this message series been working off of is working off of a story in Nehemiah as he's going through his life and has come to this situation. But before I talk about this and the message series, how many of you have ever tried to do something good and something come up in your way when you're trying to do something good? You understand? You had a good thought or a good idea. You wanted to help somebody. You wanted to serve somebody. You wanted to be nice to somebody or whatever. You just felt like you were going to do a good thing. And I mean, you really meant it. I mean a heartfelt good thing. And then it just seems like one obstacle after another comes up to just slow you down or stop you. Has that ever happened to anybody else? Yesterday I was going to Savannah, and I went down there to see my granddaughter who was in a cheerleading competition. And that sounds all great, but my granddaughter's 5 years old. And it doesn't look like it does on TV when those college cheerleaders are doing it. I'm just telling you, they look like those people in there. There's so much makeup and all this. It looks like they're older, but it's just not the same thing. But old Papaw here, that's what they call me, is Papaw and Papaw Dorsey. And I go to see them. And so me and my wife and Aubrey's dad, Brian, we drove down there. And we're running late, which, figure that. And so we get there, and I drop them off at the Coliseum. I said, y'all get out, go in there. And Jody says, well, do you have money to get in? And I'm like, well, no, I don't have money because I'm your husband. I don't have money. You have the money. And so she gave me $20, and she said, you go park the car and come. So I go, and I'm trying to find it. Now, they are building around. They're doing a lot of road work around the Coliseum. I mean, when I say road work, it's a lot of road work, okay? So I'm driving around trying to find a parking place, and I see Jason and Katie back here. I know where we did your marriage. I know. I mean, they got married on that square right out in front of that, and we did that, and we went down and went to a little restaurant down below there and had the after wedding thing that you do, you know, reception. And so anyway, I knew the area. I've drove around. I actually walked around that area, which I just started making concentric circles, and I got further and further away, and I have no idea where I was. And do you know there's a bunch of one-way streets in Savannah? And they don't always go the same way. And you know, you just because you're confused and you're lost and you're trying to read, literally I'm trying to read the signs to see where to go, people blow their horn at you. And I mean, they were like, I'm sorry I merged over in your lane. I didn't mean that. I just absolutely, you know, anyway, so I finally found the fence and I'm trying to get there and all. I'm running behind, which by the way, I missed it. However, they messed up their song, so I got to hear it. You know what I'm saying? They had to do it again, so they let them go do a do-over. So I got to see it. So it was really good. I mean, I had a good time. But here's my story about this. So I get to Savannah, and you're parking, and they got these things where you know what your number is on the street, and you go pay for it and all. And, you know, I'm just not used. We don't pay for parking here, do we? I mean, I'm just not used to that. And some of you big city people are. And so I'm like, well, do you pay on Saturdays? I mean, I don't know. So I just figured, here comes this guy with his little earbuds on or earpod, and he's walking down through there. And I'm like, I'll just ask him. And I got the $20 bill that Jody gave me, my phone, and I'm just like, hey, sir, I said, do they charge for parking on Saturday? He says, I don't have any money. I can't give to you now. And I'm like, I'm not begging. I'm not asking for something, you know. So I'm thinking, what am I dressed like or look like? He thinks I'm asking him for money. I'm like, no, I don't need that. So I'm like, okay, that's just a one-time thing. So I turned, and there's a lady walking across the street, you know, like Miss Dorsey, you know. Hey, ma'am, yelling across the street, yes. And I'm like, did they charge on Saturday for parking? And, you know, I don't want to pay $2 if I don't have to. I didn't tell her there. But anyway, I don't know. And then finally another one come, and then finally, and I asked two or three people, nobody knows. And then I said, well, I'm going to pay, so I pay and do all that. But then the problem was I'm getting ready to run to go to the place, to the Civic Center, and I done forgot where I'm at. And I'm like, and if I can find my way as a crow flies to get to the Civic Center, I don't know if I can remember where I parked this car. So then I'm calling my son, Brian. I'm like, how do you do? And he's like, there's an app on your phone, Daddy. Just hit it. Mark your location. Does anybody know this app that I'm talking about? You just mark your location. Somebody, you shook your head, baby. That's me and you. Because I don't know that app either. But analogy to the world, you're supposed to know. You push this. And so I just took a picture of the parking spot and then went on. You understand? But let me tell you, I took a picture of the parking spot. I didn't take a picture of the street. I didn't take a picture of the sign. The only guy I passed walking there, he was sleeping on the sidewalk. I think he was a homeless guy, and he was gone. So when we come back to the car, Jody and Brian were like, well, where'd you park? I'm like, well, there's this guy sleeping on the steps somewhere. And I said, I think that's the steps, but he wasn't there. You know, but it was just like I wanted to do this good thing for my granddaughter. I just wanted to be there for her. It was really a heartfelt thing. It was like I'm telling you, if it had been anything else, I'm out of there. It's just not worth it. It's just not worth the time or energy or effort. I said, I'm just going down here. Well, I'm not going to say I would have gone to a bar down there, but there was plenty of those down there. But I'm just going to go somewhere else and just, you understand what I'm saying? But it's like, it's so hard when you just really want to do something that you feel like God's calling you to do, or you want to help somebody or do something, and all of a sudden there's just one obstacle after another. It just seems like, well, how do you get over those obstacles? Well, today we're going to talk about that. Today we're going to talk about some of the obstacles that come up in people's lives, and also solutions to those obstacles. So the way that I'm going to do this is I'm going to use this Nehemiah scripture as a backdrop for this. Now again, Nehemiah, it's a book in the Old Testament in the Bible. Nehemiah, and I'm just not going to tell you real briefly, is rebuilding a city. He's rebuilding the walls. I'm not going to go through the whole story of how he got there, but it's basically he's rebuilding the walls and the gates to a city that's lost its fortification. Now, I do want to tell you this. The walls aren't like what you think of 20-foot walls around a castle. You've got to start thinking about a building like this size, and that this wall over here, that's our wall on the back of the house, is the outside world. And if I go out my front door, which is on this wall, I'm inside the wall. I'm inside the city. My house is the wall. The thickness of my house, the length from my front door to the back wall, because remember, I wouldn't have a back door on the wall to protect the city. It's just a solid wall. That is the wall. So when these walls were destroyed, it was people's homes that were destroyed. And so what happened was that people, when they would come in, they would tear down the walls, tear down this, they'd burn down the gates, they'd turn down all this stuff. And so if you start rebuilding it, then people would come up and say, well, I usually walk through those people's living rooms because it's been tore down right there. There's no roof on it, anything. When they start rebuilding, they'd have to go around through the gate. But this also meant that they had protection. And a lot of people didn't like that. So they were trying to do this good thing. They just wanted to rebuild the city. They just wanted to have some protection. They just wanted to have a livelihood. They just wanted to have this good thing. And it seems like one thing after another just tried to stop them. Listen to what it says here when in Nehemiah chapter 4, verse 6. So we rebuilt the wall till all of it reached half its height. For the people worked with all their heart. Say that with me. The people worked with what? The people worked with what? What does that mean to you when you say all your heart? You're putting all your passion, you're putting all your energy in. Hadn't you ever been in that situation where you go to help somebody and you're going to give all in? You've already made the commitment in your mind and in your heart. I'm going to give everything I can. I'm going to do everything I can. And you notice when they do that, half the wall gets built. It's like happening really quick. It's like this major miracle is happening and I'm getting to see it. But as always, stuff happens. This thing here, these people are working, it says the people worked. It ain't like they just waited on it to happen. They went out and they did the work. The people are together. It says they're working with all their hearts. So I'm doing the work. I'm not just thinking about doing the work. I'm not just praying about doing the work. We're doing the work. And I'm passionately doing it. I'm passionately into it. And then, even though we're doing something selfishly, even though we're doing something that's good or righteous or for the benefit of others, obstacles come up to them. Same thing that happens to us today. Listen to what happens. It says, but when Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs, the Ammonites, and the people of Ashur heard that the repairs to the Jerusalem walls had gone ahead and that the gaps were being closed in, they were angry. You see, the people of that area, the people who were exploiting the people that had broken homes and no gates and all, they were upset about this. And it wasn't just one group of them, it was a whole bunch of them. Even though you're doing this good thing, even though you're making this difference, some people don't like it. Even when you go out to help people in this world, somebody is not going to like it. Have you ever been walking down the street with somebody and you see somebody that's begging for money, right? And you pull a couple dollars out and you give it to them and you walk down there and the person beside you said, why'd you do that? They're just going to use it on drugs. Anybody ever been in that situation? Or tell you they're just going to do this with it. You're sitting there feeling a movement of God or feeling something in your heart to give compassion to this person. And then this other one, who's a good person, is telling you all these bad things, trying to be an obstacle to you doing good. Now, it might not have been an obstacle to you doing good to that person because you already gave them money. But that'll be a seed planted in you later on, won't it? And that seed later on might cause you to walk by somebody and go, I don't have time for you. Don't do that. And so what happens is every time that we try to do something good, or it seems like every time that we do something good or righteous, beneficial for others, putting others in front of ourselves, obstacle come. So these people didn't like it. They were very angry. It says they all plotted together to come and fight against Jerusalem and stir up trouble against it. But we prayed to God, and we posted a guard and day and night to meet this threat. Meanwhile, the people in Judah, that's the people in the county, said, the strength of the laborers is giving out, and there is so much rubble that we cannot rebuild the wall. And also, our enemies said, before they know it or see us, we will be right there among them and we'll kill them and put an end to this work. And it doesn't stop there. It's not like one obstacle, two obstacles, three. Here's another one. It says, the Jews who lived near them came and told us 10 times over, wherever you turn, they will attack you. Therefore, this is Nehemiah speaking. He's the leader. He's the leader of this group. I stationed people at some of the people behind the lowest points of the wall at the exposed places, posting them by families with their swords, their spears, and their bows. After I looked things over, I stood up and I said to the nobles and officials and the rest of the people, don't be afraid of them. Remember, the Lord who is great and awesome will fight for your families, your sons, your daughters, and your wives, and your homes. When our enemies heard that we were aware of their plot and that God had frustrated it, we all returned to the wall, each to our own work. So here's a couple of the obstacles I want you to notice in here. Number one, obstacle number one, write these down. Write these down. You got a pencil, paper, or a pencil? See, now everybody's going, well, no. Well, you know, that's why we got those blank spots in that message note, so you could write stuff down. Or if you don't, do like Lindsay, write it on your hand. That's where she writes it in. Or if you've got a really kind partner beside you, write on their hand. They won't mind. It'll be okay. Okay, so the first one is, obstacle number one that comes up is unexpected threats or trouble. There's always, no matter what you plan or what you decide, when you're going to do something good, there's always going to be something unexpected trying to stop you, trying to stop you from making a difference. In this church, we're trying to make disciples. If you're thinking we're about something else, I'm just letting you know, bust your bubble, we're about making disciples. The reason is, I can't find in scriptures where Jesus says, I want you to be a disciple. He just says, I want you to make disciples. The call on people, the call on the church is to make disciples. In order to make disciples, you have to be one. But he didn't tell you to be a disciple. He said, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything, and I'm with you always to the end of the age. That's our calling. That's our command. That's what we're told to do. See, many people in the church today just want to be disciples. They just want to hang out and chill and just receive and all that. But they don't want to do. They don't want to work. They don't want to make disciples. That's what we're about. And when you try to do that, when you try to go out and do that, even when you're not sure 100% how to do that, there's always going to be threats, unexpected troubles. In this part, we hear that they plotted together to fight against Jerusalem. So there's always someone that's going to be talking about what you're trying to do. Why are you moving that church over there? What's wrong with that church? Why are you moving both congregations together? Yes, there's a large Hispanic group over there. Yes, there are. But that's not your business. Let them worry about their own. Let them do that. There's poor people over in that neighborhood, over in that area around that other church. Why do you want to go over there? You can't hardly pay your bills where you are. Now you're going to go on and take on more ministry? Because God called us to. Because God called us to move and to do, we're going to do. We're going to figure it out as we go. And again, I don't know if that's faith. I don't know what it looks like to you. All I know is when God calls us to do something or calls me to do something, I have to do it. It's such a burden, it's such a hurt, you just have to do it. But obstacles are going to come. They're going to come to stop you. And let me tell you, the obstacles aren't coming from God. Obstacles are coming from the evil one. Now, I will say this. Some of the obstacles that come in our life aren't really obstacles. They're called speed bumps. Do you understand? Speed bumps are strategically placed in places to do one thing. Slow your tail down. You could put the signs up that says children playing, right? And they might slow down. Put a speed bump up. You understand? Put a speed bump there. They're going to slow down. They might complain and gripe and grumble. They're going to slow down. Sometimes God puts speed bumps in our life. That's not an obstacle. That's just to get you to slow down, to take a look around and see what's going on. But Satan will put obstacles there to try to get you to stop and turn around. Now, the one thing that we talk about is our symbol for the LifeSpring Church is the ripple. And we've been talking about the ripple effect, and we talked about how a ripple moves out, and one of the things it does is lifts things up and moves them along. That's what it's like to be making disciples. When you make disciples, it's lifting people up from where they are and moving them along. And so as you make disciples, and as we go and do that, there's going to be times that God might say, slow down and put some speed bumps in, but Satan is going to say, I want you to stop, and he puts an obstacle. The thing about a ripple, if you ever watch the water, when a ripple goes, if it hits an obstacle in the water that's stationary, that it can't lift up, that it can't move along, it goes around it. It separates, goes around it, reconnects, and continues on its way. It doesn't let the obstacle stop it. You tracking? Now see, unexpected threats, unexpected obstacles or troubles are going to happen. Obstacle number two, there's going to be, everybody has experienced one of these. Obstacle number two that usually stops people is physical, mental, or spiritual exhaustion. Obstacle number two is either spiritual, mental, or physical exhaustion. Listen to what it says. The strength of the laborers is giving out. That's a physical wearing out. Listen, when you work at something with all your heart, you will get exhausted. When you seek the Lord with all your heart, I'm being honest with you, you will get exhausted. It's going to happen. When you start working, when you start serving, when you start doing for others, and take yourself out of it and you start serving, you will get exhausted. Physically, mentally, and spiritually. Let me tell you spiritual side. There's times that there's people who are serving and helping people within the church community all the time, and they're the first ones to spiritually burn out. Because isn't that what burnout means? You're exhausted. You're tired. You teach Sunday school class. You teach a Bible study. You do stuff, and you teach, and you lead. You teach in your schools. I got so many school teachers. You do all this, and you do it, and you don't take care of yourself, and what happens? You burn out. I got people in my life. People in my life that are coming in my life that's trying to help me correct a lot of this physically, mentally, emotionally. They sit in this room and they encourage me and help me to get myself better. Get more rest, Dorsey. But no, there's so much to do. There's people you got to take care of. You've got to take care of yourself to be able to do that. Some of us in this room are trying to go out and make disciples, and we aren't even in the Word ourselves. We're not even taking it. We're telling people the importance of praying, and yet we aren't praying. We're telling people the importance of having a daily devotion, and we're not doing that. We're telling people the importance of what small groups are and how they change us, and yet we aren't a part. Because we put ministry or doing these good things in front of others. And in fact, what we did was we created some of our own barriers or obstacles that we have to overcome. When you're working on a relationship with a loved one, you're working on a relationship with a friend, you're working on a committed romantic relationship. You know what I'm talking about, those. They're exhausting. They are. They're exhausting. You get wore out when you work. It's work. You got to take time for yourself. My mother-in-law is living with us now, and she talks to Jody and I a lot about y'all need to take date night. You need to take date night. We used to do that, but it's like we feel this, you know, we can't be there. We got to be there for something might happen. You understand? You just as a caretaker, it's like, but we do need to take care of that. We do need to do that. When you're working on your finances, in our household, it's exhausting. You understand? It is exhausting. Figuring out which pocket I'm going to pull the money out to pay and what I'm going to have to sell or what am I... Are we rolling quarters this month? By the way, they don't take rolled coins anymore. I'll let you know that ahead of time. Just bring them in a jar, dump them in there, they'll do it for you. Because if you bring them in there rolled, they don't trust you anymore. They're going to dump it out. You just wasted your time. See, there you go. A little insight there. When you're battling sickness or you're helping take care of somebody physically or emotionally who's depressed or has a long-term illness, it's exhausting to do a good work all the time. It's exhausting to do that. It's exhausting to serve. It's exhausting, and you have got to help take care of yourself. So another barrier is mental, physical, and spiritual exhaustion. Number three, the work never seems to end. You ever felt like that? You just keep serving, you keep serving. There's still poor people. There's still homeless people. There's still people that are struggling. There's still, it just continues and continues. The work never ends. This scripture said here, it said, there is so much rubble, we cannot rebuild the wall. Sometimes that obstacle seems like it's so much. Why do we keep doing this? They keep messing up. Why do I keep pouring into an alcoholic or a drug addict's life? Why do I keep pouring this? They keep coming back to where they were. There's just so much. There's just so much. The work never seems to end. And for many people, because of that, they don't do any more ministry. They don't serve. They don't care. They don't love. They just turn and they start focusing on them. See, taking care of yourself in aspects is just a brief point of time. And then we take care of others. But you still got to take care of yourself. But some just say, well, if taking care of myself is good sometime, I'm just going to ignore everybody and take care of me. That's called selfish. That's called selfishness. So we have to overcome the obstacle. The work never seems to end. Number four is the enemy never gives up. Let me tell you, I don't care how good you are. I don't care how loving you are. I don't care how much you read your Bible. I don't care how much you study your devotional. I don't care how many disciples you make. I don't care any of that. The enemy is not going to stop coming after you. If you think that he's going to let up on you, you better. If you think he's letting up, you better turn around because he's coming from another direction. When you think and believe that you are above Satan attacking you, then he's already got you. I'm going to tell you that. When you think you're above him attacking you, that you got it going on, that everything's good in my life, that Satan didn't bother me, then I'm telling you, he's already got you. Because you're not making a difference. He's got you where he wants. He wants you stationary. Just stay still. I don't want you to move. Don't go around me. He just puts those barriers up, and they've worked. Complacency. Apathy. Atrophy. Is it atrophy? Is that right? Not apathy. The atrophy that you don't work a muscle. See, some people get worn out from working a muscle too much. Some people have a lot of pain from not working it at all. You see, there's extremes to both ends. We have to overcome those because our enemy will never give up. But it's okay. That's why he's... Because, you listen, when the enemy stops being the enemy, then I guess he's part of you. You understand? That means he's changed. Satan isn't going to change to the end. He wants to kill, steal, and destroy you and anything you come in contact with or anybody you come around with. And he does not play fair. Last one is obstacle number 5 is internal dissension and discouragement. Remember when it said, then the Jews who lived near them came and told us 10 times over, wherever you turn, they will attack us. That's one of the worst things that happens when you're trying to do ministry. It's one of the biggest obstacles to overcome is that person walking down the street trying to talk you out of doing what God's calling you to do. For some of us, it might be your parents. For some of us, it might be your siblings. For some of us, it might be a close friend. But you feel like God's calling me to do something. I feel like I need to be doing something. Something, and somebody, or this is, maybe you're not there that you know it's God. Maybe you just hear this. Somebody ought to do something about that. That's not right. What's going on in that situation? What's going on that? And your mind goes, somebody needs to do something about that. And you don't go find a somebody, you just identify it and don't do anything. Because you say to yourself, well, maybe I'm not smart enough, I don't have enough money, I don't have enough resources, I don't have enough time. You begin to have these internal things where you actually discourage yourself out from doing what God's called you to do. Sometimes it's your friend that discourages. No, you don't have time. No, you can't do that. No, you know. And then other times, it's you're discouraging yourself. I can never do that. I never do that. I'm still on my weight journey. I'm still on my weight kick. I haven't seen the progress I want to see, maybe because I hadn't put the effort in, because maybe that has something to do with it. But I still got people encouraging me because they know I want it. They ain't giving up on me. See, that's the type of people you need in your life that encourage you when you have something that's a heartfelt thing you're trying to make. And even when you can't figure it out, when you want to serve and make a difference, you want those people that encourage you. And help get those voices out of your head that discourage you and say you can't do it. So how do we overcome these obstacles? I've given you some of those things, but I'm going to give you a couple things. Here's a couple ways that you can overcome obstacles. Number one that Nehemiah did that we can do is pray. It's pray. Now, praying means, to me, a couple of things. One, it means asking God for guidance, and it means asking God for the courage to overcome. Do you understand? It's asking God for guidance and the courage to overcome. A lot of people pray for one or the other. Many people fail to pray for both. See, I can get guidance but not have the courage. God can tell me the guidance of what I need to do, but if I ain't got the courage, I'm like, can't do it. That's not me. And then some can pray for the courage, and they'll run through brick walls, but he praying, running through brick walls that God didn't tell them to run through because they didn't ask for guidance. It's a combination of asking God to give you guidance and courage to do the things he's calling you to do. We ask God for that. And then the other is we turn it over to God. We trust that in our prayer life. Listen, God hears your prayers. If somebody's told you that you're too bad, the stuff that you've done, your past, that God can't hear you, it is wrong and is a lie from the pit of hell. God hears your prayers. He cares for you. Therefore, when you ask, give me guidance, whether it's a financial thing, whether it's a relational thing, whether it's a work thing, well, something that you want to put all your heart in, when you ask for guidance, God will give that to you. And he'll give you courage if you ask for that. But you got to ask. It's just a simple thing. Ask and you shall receive. When you're silent, what can you say? You have not because you didn't ask. So turn it over to God. Pray. Second thing is to overcome obstacles. Put up some guards. Remember what he said. He said, therefore, I stationed some people behind the lowest points of the wall and exposing. He put up guards. Let me tell you what a guard is in your life. A guard is something that watches for or watches out for the enemy, confronts it at the first sign of danger when he sees it or she sees it. A guard is there to protect you, but when it sees the enemy, it doesn't drop its weapons and run back here and say, hey, guys, this thing over here is trying to kill me or kill y'all. Y'all might want to come check it out. No. Guardrails buckle down, hunker down, or people who are guards guard their position. They're put there for a reason. They're guarding it. So they start the fight. They have their stuff. They start the battle. They're watching for it. They see it coming. When you have a guard up, you see it coming. Some of you are in the situations that you're in right now because you failed to put a guard up. If you've got a problem lusting after women. You could have a problem lusting after guys too, but I'm just saying, if you have a problem with that, then you need to put some guardrails up. You don't need to get to the point. Let me tell you, this wasn't in my message notes, but I'm just going to say this because I'm here at this point and that's what I'm thinking about, so I'm going to say it. So can I say this? Can I go ahead? Okay, here's what I'm saying. Let's talk about premarital sex for a minute. Just a second. It's an illustration. It's not the only point, but I think you can understand what I'm going to say. Premarital sex. The time to decide I'm not going to have premarital sex is not when you're rubbing up on somebody else. You better have made that up. You better have made that up in your mind way earlier than that. Are you tracking with me? If you young people, you don't know this, I'm telling you, there's just certain things that happen once you get it's called the tipping point. I think I'm just created that. It's called the tipping point. There ain't no coming back. If you don't believe that, you go listen to Paradise by the Dashboard Lights by Meatloaf. And you listen to that song all the way through, and it's like, I started praying to my mother and my God, love you to the end of time. Old school people, but young people, you go back and you listen to that song. Y'all got time? It's on the iPod. It's somewhere on there. Whatever that thing is. Does anybody know that song, or am I just talking out of my head here? You know, Paradise by the Dashboard Lights, Meatloaf, Bat Out of Hell, one of the top selling records of all time, or whatever. You know it now. And all the little kids are going, what is he talking about? Don't you listen to that song. My point is, you have to determine and put up guardrails for that. If you know that is a temptation, you need to put the guardrail three or four places back. Charlie and I was riding the other day, and we were talking. We were going to somewhere, and we were talking. We were driving. I was telling him that, you know, there's guardrails on the side of the road that are solid. You know what I'm talking about? You know the metal ones. Yeah. They protect you from going off in the ditch, right? Yeah. But then they have these places where it's that little bit of road that goes burp, burp, burp. You know when you run off to the edge of the road, you know what I'm talking about? And then they have this other one that's just a white line or the yellow line. It's like, there's the edge of the road, one more foot over there, right? Which one of them is the strongest guardrails? Or which is one of those the strongest barriers to keep you from going off? The steel one. Where do you put those? At the most dangerous place. At the place that's more likely for you to go off. Around a curve. You understand? Because that little that when you run across those rough spots, ain't going to stop me from not turning around the curve. I'm off in the woods. You have to put the right guardrail, the right guard at the right place. Listen to what Nehemiah did. When he's writing this, he's like, he says, therefore I stationed some people behind the lowest points of the wall. He's strategic about where he puts the guardrails. If you've got a problem looking at guys or looking at girls, put the guardrail there. But I'm going to tell you a little trick that I'm trying to do in my life. It is so hard. But I'll tell you, if this is the edge to fall off, you got me? I cross over there, I can't come back. Put my guardrail right here, right? I'm just going to suggest to you, if you think that's enough space, take another step this way and put it here. You with me? I'm just telling you, especially if you're putting them little white lines or that, unless you put a solid thing like this to where you've got a collar around your neck or something, and somebody snatches you from so you don't go off the edge, you better be putting them back here. You with me? Now, isn't that the truth on everything? If you've got spending problems, you need to put the guardrail back here. If you got problems not getting your homework done on time, you don't need to wait to hear. You need to put your guardrail back here. All of these things are things that you have to do. It's put the guardrail in strategic places where they help you the best. Next one is work in small teams. He said, I stationed some of the people. Put people with you who will help you. People who encourage you. People who will be in the battle with you, but will guide you to what that heartfelt thing is that God's calling you to do. They're there. They probably noticed it on you before you noticed it. They probably seen something changing in you, and then they just don't want to ask to be the one to help because they think you got tons of people. And maybe you do, but maybe that's the one person you've been waiting to talk to, and that's the one person waiting to help you. Be in a small group to help you along that way. Here's the next thing. He says that he put them out there by families at the lowest points. They took their swords, their spears, and their bows. Take your defensive tools with you. You just don't, listen, when you come to church and you read your Bible or at your devotional time at home, you're listening to, take your stuff with you. That's why we sing. You know what the best thing about songs are in worship for me? Is that we sing them sometimes, and 3 days later I'm singing them again, and I don't know where it comes from. I took it with me. You with me? You take that stuff with you. You can't just come here and listen to stuff and put your notes in here and not take it with you. You with me? You just don't do your devotional in the morning and go, oh, that helped me out and made me go. You reflect on it. You get it inside. You let it be a part of you. You take this with you, and that changes everything. You start taking this to your work. You start taking this to your schools. You start taking this to your families, to your finances, to whatever's going on. It changes everything. But more importantly, it changes you. Because you begin to start to figure out how to overcome the barriers instead of being stopped by the barriers. And then you begin to live into what God's been calling you to do or is calling you to do that's new. And you make a difference in this world. So we've got to encourage one another. Talk to people. Nehemiah stood up and gave one of them, you know, Dabo Sweeney's speeches. He gave one of those big speeches to say, hey, we got to do this. Listen, remember where we've been. Remember where we come from. Remember, we were once a broken people. We're back. See, because I know this about you, if you haven't heard this. You, the scriptures say this, you are a chosen people. The scripture said that. I didn't say that. I'm just repeating. You are a chosen people. A royal priesthood. There's days I don't feel like that. There's probably days you don't feel like that. But there's days that people remind me that's who I am. And it gives me the courage and the strength to go on to remember, this is not my home here. I'm working for a better place, and I'm trying to help everybody else's place, everybody else's home get better. Because I'm a chosen person. Those who are chosen, much is responsible. We got much responsibility. You are a chosen people. It's not an accident that you're here. God's been working with you for years. Some of you, you only recognize it in the last days. But he's been working with you for years. And then finally, the last way that you overcome the obstacles is to remember the why. Nehemiah steps up and he says this phrase. He says, fight for your families, fight for your sons, fight for your daughters, your wives, and your homes. He pulls up everything because everything is connected to what you do. You want to know the truth of it? You matter. I'm straight up with you. It's not that you don't matter. You matter. Now, you're not the tail wagging the dog. That's not going to happen, but you matter. What part you play in the transformation of this world is some things in this world you are the only one God has called to do. Or you and another friend, or you and another, you are the one that they called. You can wish somebody else would do it. He's given you that burden. Some of you are just sensing this burden for the first time. As we head over, when Jose's sitting here, and I caught a glimpse of you just there a minute ago, Jose, and this lady that was there at Langston today, and she's telling me about how it used to be. She said, I've come back from Missouri, or she said Missouri. Somebody else said Missouri. She comes back from Missouri and comes home to see her family and everything. She said, by the way, I'm going to be buried in that cemetery. I already got my spot made. The people in Columbus, Missouri knows to ship me back here. Now, she's a college professor of Spanish. That's what she does in Missouri. And she said 15 or 20 years ago when I was visiting, I told the pastor then, there's a lot of Hispanics around here. Have you ever thought about doing Hispanic ministry? And I'm like, yeah. We pull the demographics. And the demographics show it is the highest Hispanic population is gathered within a half-mile radius of that church over there. And I said, a guy that was once training to be a Catholic priest who's joined our church and who spoke in front of our congregation to everybody, not Hispanics, to everybody, that we're sitting here prepping and priming and getting ready to go out and to have a place where we can open the doors and say, we don't care what you are. Dorsey doesn't speak Spanish that well, but Jose, he's got it pretty good. He speaks it anyway. And there's no translation dilemma. You know what I'm saying? Because your mama, she's still Catholic, but she comes, and when she comes, she doesn't understand what I'm saying. She told her, she said, I know they laugh. I don't know what they're laughing about, because by the time you stop laughing and translate it to me, you understand what I'm saying? But now somebody will speak their own language in a place that's provided by people who've never even thought about that group of people. If things go like what God's calling us to do, families in that area will have a place to come and worship because they don't have transportation to get to town. You guys can get 4.5 miles over there. Some of them can't. Some of them are dependent on somebody to pick them up or bring them. This, you have to remember your why. It is more than about you. It is about transforming this world. So today I've listed out several obstacles. And every one of them are there. And there's probably more that you've run into. But I've also listed out some solutions. Some ways that you can try to overcome these things. I don't want you to be the wave, the ripple of what God's dropped into you and created this ripple. And you move out into this world and you come up to this obstacle and you think, I'm done. Time to go back. It was a good ride. It was a good journey. I lifted people up and I moved them along the way until I hit this one obstacle of money, time, energy, whatever. And go back home. What I want you to do is figure out a way. Work with the people around you to figure out a way to get around that obstacle and reconnect. Because when you get around that obstacle and you reconnect, the wave continues on. And the ministry that lifts and moves people on their way expands exponentially. And the world begins to look more like the kingdom of God rather than the kingdom of Satan. That's what we're about. That's what you're about. And that begins today when you walk out these doors. And you have to decide that now. Let us pray.